to Topple Uncaged. I'm Steve Topple, and over the next 20 minutes, I'll be bringing you the quickest firing news roundup of the week. I'll be getting down and dirty with a very special guest going through some big stories. I'll be taking apart this week's Question Time, and also I'll be bringing you some of the biggest, most banging political tunes going. So, lock and load, people. Let's go.
Uncaged.
What's up, everyone? I am Steve Topple. It is Sunday, the 25th of November, 2018, and this is Topple Uncaged, Episode 2. I know, the Canary have let me back for another week. Oh, obviously, I wasn't controversial or outrageous enough in the last episode, so let's see if we can't rectify that now. As usual, we'll be kicking off with some plucked news. I'll be getting the top stories oven ready for you for roasting and giving them a bit of a baste along the way. Followed by that, I'll be free-flying with a very special guest who the mainstream media does not give enough attention to. Then I'll be taking on BBC QT in this week's Question Time. Topple chirps back. And then finally, I'll be getting some more revolutionary bird song with a very, 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 very special and exciting guest with one of the hottest, most banging political tunes of the week. So, are you ready for this? Steady? Let's go. The fastest news segment in the UK, it's Plucked News. To be honest with you, Uncagedsters, I could do with a good pluck after the week I've had. So here it is, Plucked News. I'm going to lay the chicken of the top stories on its back and give it a good stuffing with some of my own opinions. 5 news stories, 5 minutes. Can I do it? 3, 2, 1. Here we go. First up, we're off to The Sun. Tories must concentrate on dismantling Jeremy Corbyn. This is The Sun's opinion that Corbyn must not get into power and the Tories must stop him at all costs. They say that capitalism's image is in crisis, but however, socialism unfailingly ends in ruin. Oh, this nonsense week after week after week after week from The Sun. If you look at Corbyn, he's not really socialism. He's certainly not a communist. He's more democratic socialism. His policies now are fairly centrist in terms of the political spectrum. If you look at the Nordic model, the Swedish model of countries, democratic socialism has in part worked over there. And that's all really Corbyn is proposing. It's not radical. It's not really that out there. Nationalising some of the industries, more investment in public spending, better services, higher tax rates for corporations. Oh my God, it's outrageous! But of course, it would be outrageous for the crony capitalist right-wing Sun. Next up, we're off to that bastion of impartiality and impeccable public service broadcasting. Lols. BBC News. They ran with the story this week saying, climate change, warming gas concentration, a new record high. This is a story from the World Meteorological Organization that CO2 levels in the atmosphere are now at their highest ever seen in 3 to 5 million years. Not only that, apparently there's evidence that banned CFCs are back. BBC managed to do this whole story without giving any context about why these levels are so high. So, let me give you some. In the past 30 years, 100 corporations have produced 70% of greenhouse gas emissions. Not only that, the Tories are encouraging fracking, which also contributes to greenhouse gas emissions. And yet, the narrative we hear day in, day out is, we've all got to do something about it. Keep recycling. Make sure you buy less plastic. Use your car less. Do this, do that, do the other. It's a notion of original sin that somehow we are all to blame for this crisis, and not, actually, that it's firstly the system and secondly the corporations that operate in it, which are responsible for this. I am sick to death of being blamed for greenhouse gas and climate breakdown. We can do very little about it. What we need to do is have a complete system rethink. We need to end corporatist capitalism and stop these corporations running the world and killing it for the rest of us. And for story number 3, I'm off to my mates at ME Action Network UK. They tweeted, amazing news! Carol Monaghan MP has been successful with her application for a House of Commons main chamber debate on ME as she announced during a Ford ME group meeting yesterday. Clap, clap, clap. Now, if you don't know, ME stands for myalgic encephalomyelitis. It is a chronic debilitating neuroimmune disease thought to have its causes in a virus. It's estimated between 17 and 30 million people worldwide live with ME and at least 250,000 people in the UK. So, why all the fuss about ME? Well, in 2011, The Lancet, a medical journal, published a study into ME. This was called the PACE trial. It found that the best treatments for it were cognitive behavioural therapy, CBT, and graded exercise therapy, GET. However, now it's been proven that both of these treatments are unsuccessful. The nuts and the bolts of the story are that the PACE trial was part-funded by the Department for Work and Pensions, trying to get people off benefits of those who live with ME, quite possibly. It was also influenced by the insurance industry, denying people health insurance if they live with ME. Yes, I think so. This is one of the most crooked stories stories around. And as Karen Monaghan said, it's probably the biggest medical scandal of the 21st century. Why? Because post-child has left people with ME with no support, no treatment, often worse, and quite often people have died. This is an absolute scandal. If you don't know about it, check out ME Action Network UK on Twitter. Follow the ME Association as well. Big scandal. Everyone needs to get involved in this. Learn more, people. And for story number four, we are off to The Guardian. They published on the 24th of November that French Gilets Jaunes protests turned violent on the streets of Paris. This is the story of the continued protests against Macron and his planned rise in fuel tax. But the protests have turned into a more broader expression of disdain at the French president. Firstly, you lot elected a centrist banker president. What did you expect? Did you think he was going to be working for you? Or did you think he was going to be working for the corporate elite? What did you think he was going to do? Be nice? Give you all extra holiday? No, of course he was never going to do this. He's a centrist banker, for God's sake. This is just one example of the world being in political chaos at the minute. You've got protests in France. You've got Trump in America. You've got the chaos in Britain. You've got chaos across Europe. You've got Israel's government looking ready to fall. It's just mad, mad, mad. Why is it mad? Because people are unhappy with the system. And I don't think they quite realise it. So therefore, they're taking out on their politicians. What we should be doing is coming together and saying, nope, the system doesn't work, whatever politicians are in. And finally, story number five, and it's from my mate Tom Coburg, and we're across the Canary. He says, report fails to mention MI6 role in lead up to Manchester bombing, despite evidence. This is the story of Salman Abedi and MI6's role in what happened there. Basically, MI6 was promoting people like Abedi when we were trying to overthrow Gaddafi. MI6 let him leave the country to go and fight the former head of Libya, and then of course they let him return as a thank you. But moreover, what this story is about is a continuous interference in the Middle East and North Africa that we see from our governments, and it never works out, and we keep repeating the same story over and over again. If you go back to the 1980s, the UK and the US effectively created Al-Qaeda by allowing the Mujahideen in Afghanistan to fight the Russians. We then see the same thing with the rise of ISIS after the unsuccessful Iraq war, and we've now seen the same thing in Libya and with the terrible Manchester bombing. I think my friend and comedian Lee Camp probably summed it up best when he said essentially the West plays in the Middle East a game of whack-a-mole, where we keep hitting the heads of these dictators keep popping up, not realising they're actually our own arm. But of course it's deeper than that. All these wars, all the creation of these terrorist organisations have essentially been about the same thing. Iraq, oil. Syria, oil. Libya, oil. Yemen, kind of about oil. Well, it's about the Bab el-Mandab Strait, but that's essentially about oil as well. When are we going to stop doing this? When are we going to stop meddling in the Middle East? Only when the oil runs out, probably, and then we'll probably find another excuse to anyway. And I think that's it. I think that's my 5 minutes up. I haven't even had time to talk about the kneecap breakers, homophobes and racists gathering in Northern Ireland. Sorry, it's a you and me, the DUP conference. And Arlene Foster coming out and saying she preferred Jeremy Corbyn to be Prime Minister than to accept May's Brexit deal. Corbyn, I'd look after your kneecaps if I were you. I also haven't had time to mention the fact that my mate Alex Tiffin, behind the Universal Credit Sufferer website, is wanting to start a welfare rebellion campaign after the burying of the UN report by Philip Alston this week. Alex, go, go, go. I'm fully behind you on that one. Check out Alex. His Twitter handle is Respect Is Vital. Nor have I had time to send my very best wishes and lots of love to Harry Leslie Smith, the 95-year-old veteran campaign, amazing guy who's not been very well in the Canadian hospital. But by the looks of things, he's getting better now. So Harry, lots of love being sent your way. And I haven't even had time to mention the fact that the new head of the army, Mark Carlton Smith, there's a council estate working class name if you ever heard one, has come out and said that Russia is a bigger threat to the UK than ISIS. Russia, bigger threat than ISIS? I wasn't aware that Russia was going around chopping off people's heads, decapitating people, selling women as a sexual slavery, but maybe I missed something. I would probably say, though, that the 14 million people in the UK who are in poverty, 4 million of those are children, 2/3 of those who are in working families, probably say a bigger threat to them is actually the Tories. But there we go. I'm going for a lay down. That was this week's Plucked News. Dissecting this week's top stories, it's me, Free Flying, with... So, joining me this week for Free Flying With... I'm very excited to have in the Topple Uncaged studio, or rather, my council house in South London, it's only campaigner extraordinaire and activist Paula Peters. Paula, thank you so much for joining me.
Steve, you're more than welcome. Hello, everyone.
We love Paula. I love Paula. Nicola loves Paula, and it's great to have her here. So, Paula, we're going to rattle through three stories. We're going to start off with the UN visit by Philip Alston and the effective whitewash that the government has put on this. Basically, long and short of it is, Amber Rudd has come out and said, oh, it was extraordinary political language and we strongly disagree with Alston's analysis. But has this report been brushed under the carpet and is it going to go the same way as the four previous UN reports that came before it? Paula.
Well, let's give her a new nickname, Atrocious Fudge. She fudged Windrush and she's going to fudge the DWP.
Yes.
She's a fine one to talk about political language when the government policies of today are political choices they've made to dismantle our welfare state, our NHS, but also the use of language they use to cause division in our communities, worker against claimant, striver against shirker, scrounger, fraudster. So she's a fine one to talk about language, and she's been instrumental in voting against benefit cuts and for universal credit, which is having a massive impact on claimants right now. And it was really interesting last Friday when Philip Alston had his press conference that only RT was able to go, because obviously everyone was concerned, was Theresa May going to go? Was she? Wasn't she? And everyone was at Parliament. And of course, that didn't happen. So.
Exactly. Now, you filmed something quite interesting there, because we had this whole hullabaloo with Jacob Rees-Mogg coming out and wandering 48 letters to get Theresa May out, and then that never materialised. Yeah. But the Brexit bus has been rolling on and on and on and on. And this damning report, which, and I was looking at it and doing sort of an analysis for New Internationalist, and I was comparing it to other country reports. China's was far better than ours. China wasn't as bad as the report that Alston gave the UK. But again, this appears to have been brushed away. Very little context about the four previous UN reports. So do you think anything's going to come off the back of this? Do you think anything's going to change because of Alston's work?
While we have the Tories in power, I have to say no. They will brush it under the carpet, just completely deny it. They've got the mainstream media in their pockets to make sure that it's not put out into the wider public arena. It is our duty and our responsibility to keep highlighting Philip Alston's findings and keep putting pressure under the government. And the only way we can do that is by everyone uniting and fighting together, building a mass movement to get the Tories out and highlighting these issues.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Paula, exactly so, because we cannot rely on politicians, and we certainly don't want corporations involved. It's going to have to be down to activists yet again. That leads us into our next topic somewhat. I'm afraid we're going to have to talk about him. Stephen Yaxley Lennon, or who prefers to be known as Tommy Robinson, but I'm not going to call him that. I'm going to call him by his real rancid name. So, Gerard Batten of UKIP has appointed Tommy Robinson to advise him, allegedly, on rape gangs and prison. Batten said that Robinson was well respected for his take on things and his courage. But Paula, we're seeing the rise of the far right a lot. The challenge is, do you think that the left as a body, its approach to the far right and what it's doing to try and tackle the rise of it, is going far enough?
What I said recently, and actually what I said in the summer when I was on a demo at Stand Up to Racism in central London, what we need to do is get out into our schools, our further education colleges, our universities. We need to get out, you know, do more in our communities, in our workplaces, and challenge the divisions that we see that are compounded by our Tory government. We need an extensive education programme to teach tolerance and inclusion and about diversity and challenge racism. But I think it's also important that show racism the red card. Professional footballers could do more around this topic, that when they're subjected to racism out on the pitch, out in the street and everything, they could do more. And kids actually look up to a lot of professional footballers and sports people who've been affected by racism, and I think they have a fundamental part to play. But also, we need to challenge the government rhetoric fired in our mainstream media. Mm-hmm. You know, especially since Brexit, we have seen a 78% rise in Islamophobia. Mm-hmm. You have seen, you know, a 64% rise in homophobia, a 54% rise in disabledism. Yeah. And it's massively important that we have got to challenge the mainstream media rhetoric that the government are driving to divide communities. But education is important. Demos have their place, but I do think education is key to really get into the root of of racism, but getting out in our communities and doing more about it.
Yeah, I completely agree, because the thing is, what the left has done for decades and decades and decades and decades is to put their boots on, go out on the street and shout the far right down and march against them, which isn't addressing the real root cause and the real problematic nature of it here, which is it festering in communities and festering with people who don't go out on marches and who don't support necessarily the National Front or National Action or what used to be the BNP, but it's people's views within communities, and that then leads to groups like the EDL being able to gain such prominence. So no, I completely agree with you. We need to have a different approach. It needs to be education, inclusion, and people, the left, need to get into communities. So Owen Jones, that's you. It's all very nice you finally decided to go out on an anti-racism march. Do you want to come and knock a few doors around here? I await your reply. Moving on, Paula, this was your choice of story. So the Mental Health Resistance Network, a great group that you and I both support and you are heavily involved in, were out this Tuesday on a demonstration. However, things that go according to plan. So for our listeners who might not be aware of this, because it got very little coverage apart from Disability News Service, the excellent John Pring reported on it. Briefly, Paula, what happened on Tuesday with this demo about mental health within the NHS and more broadly the government, and what were your thoughts on it? Explain for our listeners, please.
Basically, they had what is called a Westminster Health Forum, which they get the DWP and national charities and psychiatrists, mental health professionals together, and it was called the Next Steps for Mental Health Services in England. So basically, by 2020, as part of the NHS 5-year forward view, you're going to have £1 billion worth of cuts to mental health funding. But what they're really driving home is employability is a health solution.
This work is a health outcome.
Is a health outcome. And we have one psychiatrist, Geraldine Strafty. She actually said that many people in mental distress don't want to work. It is choice. And this was a psychiatrist. And, you know, Denise, co-founder of MHRN, was absolutely amazing. She went in with a couple of other activists and she challenged the absolute toxicity of the forum. They treated people in mental distress appallingly. Denise was threatened and she was shouted at by National Mind and by this psychiatrist and by Alistair Whittington, the medical director for St. Thomas's. And basically they talked about us like we were just commodities, not people, and that work is a health outcome, is going to be part of people in mental distress treatment programs. Yep. So what we're seeing is the co-productive working of the DWP and the NHS, where both organisations will be toxic, but the underlying factor is to literally deny people in mental distress health support.
Yep.
So take away the NHS, but also deny you DWP support with benefits and everything.
Yeah.
And you're seeing mental health, people in mental distress, real targeted. Now, we look at work as a health outcome. Mm. I've got a fellow trade unionist in Unite who has horrendous depression, suffered many years, who works in an organisation in my local area. And he's been off work since August and they're putting him under tremendous pressure to go back to work. And he's just had to go back to the GP because he's not at all well.
Yeah.
And he's off work with work-related stress. So you've got people who are unable to work, who will never be able to work, and they are driving productivity. And when it's actually causing mental health issues to rise, not only in the workplace, but at school as well. And that's important.
But of course, because it has a knock-on effect on the children, doesn't it? If there's a member in the family in mental distress. Now, the challenge with this demo was that the turnout was really not good at all for it, which was somewhat upsetting and sad to see, because this is a really important issue. It's something that, this is an issue which the press really don't pick up on, but the fact that people with mental health issues and those in mental distress are the next target group of this government. We've seen it with people with myalgic encephalomyelitis, ME, were the previous target group with regards to the PACE trial, and now if you look at the Improving Lives Green Paper, that was filled with stuff, firstly about mental health and getting people in mental distress back to work, but also musculoskeletal diseases. They're the two target areas, and there's a real push back on mental health and forcing people back into work now. But this demo was quite poorly attended. What's going on here? Because I know as well as you do, and you're one of them, and my girlfriend Nicola is another one of them, so many disabled activists are exhausted now. Yeah. This has been going on for years and years and years and years and years. But we're not seeing the support from other organisations, in my opinion. Do you think that's correct? And what do organisations outside of the disability rights movement need to do to support disabled people?
What the left has a massive problem, in my opinion, they're not joining up the dots.
Mm.
Universal credit's one of those.
Yeah.
That is affecting in and out of work claimants, and they're really not joining the dots. And the government's done a great job of this division, worker against claimant,
yeah.
when Labour comes out with the party of the worker.
Yeah. So how Rachel Reeves, wasn't it?
So how many people feel represented by them when they say the party of the worker if you're not working
yeah.
and you feel kind of just marginalised? The thing is, I think that is very much the same in many organisations, many unions. It's all worker, 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 worker.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, all of these issues around the welfare state, our NHS, in our communities affect every single one of us. They get bogged down in their own little issues like work disputes and everything like that, and they are not looking at the bigger picture. You have to join all the strands together,
yeah.
which is the privatisation of our NHS, the abolition of our welfare state. Mm-hmm. You've got to join the dots together. So, but also what is another problem are the egos that are raging on the left that are causing huge divisions. This union won't work with that union, this person won't work with that person, and all the infighting. What I'd say to people out there, and it is a big ask, we have somehow got to put division aside, we have got to put the egos aside, we've got to find the common ground, find a common aim, and you unite everybody and build a mass movement that can bring the change we want to see. We are not going to get it in Parliament, we are going to have to do it out here on the street, and I've always advocated that.
Yep. And Paula, I think that ties the three stories we've talked about quite nicely together, actually, because they all end with that same thought, whether it be the UN visit and the Tories' response to it, whether it be the rise of the far right, or whether it be the degradation of the Department for Work and Pensions and our NHS. The left does not need to be any more divided and needs to come together on all these issues and realise they are all one and the same issues, essentially. The march of neoliberalism, if you wish to call it that, or crony corporatist capitalism, if you wish to call it that, or the eugenicist agenda, which accompanies those. It's all one and the same issue, and the left really needs to get a grip and unite and fight together now on this. That is crucial. Paula, thank you so much for joining me. That was exciting, wasn't it?
Steve, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank
that
you for having
great.
Me.
That was great. There was only Paula Peters on Free Flying with Mr. Topple this week. Paula, check her out on Twitter. It's at PaulaPeters2. Thank you so much.
Taking down this week's BBC QT, it's question time. Topple chirps back. I realised just before recording this that I've inadvertently dug my own grave, because now I'm going to have to watch Question Time week in, week out, week in, week out, just to make sure that no one gives the answers to the questions that I'm going to give you. So let joy be unconfined. I'll be a regular Question Time viewer once again. Not that it's going to show me anything new. I mean, just this week we had Julia Hartley Brewer on for the second time in 2 months. What's that all about? Where are the fresh panellists? Who knows? So what have you got for me, Question Time? First question, please.
In trying to please all of the people, has Theresa May only succeeded in pleasing none?
Will you just stop it? Stop it, stop it, shut up, stop it, stop it, stop it about Brexit! But if we must talk about it, has Theresa May succeeded in pleasing none of the people? I don't think Theresa May's goal was ever to please anyone. This deal is not good for leavers, this deal is not good for remainers, this deal isn't certainly any good for the country, but why would we expect any difference? Since when has Theresa May, Prime Minister, had anyone's best interests at heart, apart from her own and a handful of those in the party? And meanwhile, amid this Brexit chaos, other things get pushed under the carpet. Don't forget, in this episode, it took an audience member to actually bring up the subject of Philip Alston's UN visit to the UK. Next question, please.
Is Denise Coates, Bet365, an astute businesswoman whose success we should celebrate, or a business taking advantage of vulnerable people?
She's an astute businesswoman, all right. If you assume her staff are paid the national living wage of £10 an hour, that's assuming they are, then her salary of £265 million a year is 12,740 times more than a member of her staff on the national living wage. This is firstly absolutely disgusting, but then then it's, of course, inherent of our corporatist capitalist system. But moreover, what no one discussed on Question Time is what gambling is really all about. Gambling is another symptom of our failing crony corporatist capitalist system. Like alcohol, like drugs, like sex, like shopping, gambling is just another way people try and escape from the misery of their everyday lives by ploughing money into something in the vain hope they might be able to improve their lot, when in the reality is people like Denise Coates, who are owning £12,740 more than her basic employee, are really the ones who only benefit from this system. Next question, please.
One in 200 Britons are sleeping rough or in temporary accommodation. How has this been allowed to happen?
I can tell you exactly how this has been allowed to happen. It's certainly not a political accident. It is absolutely by choice. We have seen private rental prices rocketing, house building falling flat, people socially cleansed from the heart of London, mental health services cut, addiction services cut, the NHS privatised, veterans coming out of the army with no support. And all the while, the Conservative government stands by and rubs its hands, shrugs its shoulders and said, nothing to do with us, Gov. Of course, it's everything to do with you, but then this is intentional policy. You see it in Universal Credit. The Conservative government is intentionally trying to create an underclass of people in this country, the ones that don't deserve their help, in their opinion, and who therefore are going to be left to the will of charities, food banks and the like to support them. If you think this is an accident, then you are very, very mistaken. And that's it. Do I really have to cover this crap week in, week out? Yes, I think I do, because it's important we get another message out there, because Question Time certainly isn't going to have me on. Until next week, thanks Question Time. Goodbye. Quick, quick, it's the Topalong Cage Black Friday Cyber Monday special. In this week's episode, you're getting 15 minutes free. Yes, free. Don't forget, Topalong Cage is free from artificial opinions, BBC preservatives and mainstream media additives. Well, actually, you're getting 15 minutes free because my next guest is so amazing and the interview is so on point that I did not want you to miss a second. So, wait for it. And here's this week's banger in Revolutionary Birdsong. Oh my gosh, I check my own privilege every day and I'm probably going to sound like a bit of a dick now, but I'm so excited because I get to have some amazing musical people on here who really inspire me and who I'm really like every day bowled over by. And this week's is only Marcy Phonics, massive grime artist and one of the most astute political voices going at the minute. Marcy, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Come on, my brother. Steve, how are you, mate?
Yeah,
you
good? I'm good, good, good. So, you've currently got out a series of songs called Black Friday. You're in the midst of it at the minute. We had Black Peter out first, and then we've had Black Friday 2 out just this Friday, just gone on Black Friday, ironically enough. So, Marcy, Black Friday, this series is really hard-hitting, and it's sort of, there's some real uncomfortable truths in there. For some people, I think it's great that you're doing it because there's some really important messages in there. But what brought you to come to the decision to make this series of songs? What sort of provoked you, as it were?
Yeah, do you know what it is? I'm done with listening to lies. Yeah. So every day we got lies everywhere, Steve. We get them in the paper, we get it on the news, we get it in the music. The other rappers I see that are blowing up and it's all great, cool, the music's moving, but a lot of people are lying in their music just to get, as it were, like views and hits and more plays and stuff like that. So me, I've always been a fan of people like Bob Marley, and people like that, who, Lauryn Hill, people like that.
Lauryn Hill.
Truth in their music. Yeah. I know she has a little bits and stuff that she's done where she's maybe taken a wrong turn here and there. But in terms of the music, the real music and the art form, I've always been a lover of the truth tellers. Yeah. And I'm the truth teller. So for me, Black Friday, I made it just because I wanted to mention some of the unspoken truths, especially that happened in this country, and put it into art form. So, for example, Black Friday 3, we talk about Jeremy Clarkson.
Okay.
Jeremy Clarkson, he's a man who can say nigger and still get a job at ITV and still get things for Netflix and blah, 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 blah. You know, so there's so many different unspoken truths. I'm just like, you know what, I'm going to use my series to out some of these things and just, you know, expose what's what. And let's go. And if you're into the realness, you come and follow me. And if you want to go and dance around to some fake bullshit over there, then you go over there. It's all good.
But you know what I mean? That's kind of, do you know what the main takeaway from listening to the first two tracks of this series was for me? Mm. It's kind of the rawness and the way you kind of flip it. And you're making sort of the black community look in on itself almost at some points. Because it's kind of the way you talk about the, especially the reference to that you made in the interview you gave me for an article about the show Roots. boots how sort of in modern day times, especially with sort of record labels, black people are essentially sometimes playing into white people's agendas still almost.
Because they do it because naturally some people do it and they don't realise they're doing it and they're just getting their check and they're doing what they think needs to be done. But a lot of the time people are protecting their endorsement deals. So for example, if you've got a big brand that comes over and hands you 20K and says, right, for the next 6 months, we always need you to wear our stuff in your songs, but give us more of blah, 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 blah. If you've been talking about gun crime and you've been talking about, I'm going to go and chef this one, I'm going to go and do that. And that's what's driving the views. And in getting those views, you're getting a check from whatever brand.
Yeah.
You're going to continue to do that. So you are that guy who's, you're that fiddler, you're that guy, you're that entertainer who's basically just trying to keep the master happy. Yeah. You're willing to do anything it takes to do that. But I don't have those. I refuse to take those checks, innit? I don't take those deals. If I was to ever do a collaboration or a partnership with a major record label, it will be just backing what I'm doing already.
Yeah.
I can say what I want. I'm the truth teller. I could do what I want. I say what I want. I put my own shit out. I don't care about millions of views and all that. That's cool. If you love me, you'll come. If you don't, it don't matter. But yeah, of course, in this country right now, a lot of the artists are basically just doing what they can to keep the man upstairs happy.
Absolutely. And the thing is, this shit has to end somewhere because it's like nothing's moved on in hundreds of years. Do you know what I mean? Absolutely crazy. And sort of, I know you reference Grenfell a lot, and sort of Grenfell was one of the peaks of that, if you like. But you've your background, you've been doing this for quite a lot of years, haven't you? You're like one of the pioneers of grime music, almost.
Yeah, I like to think so. I mean, I was there on the pirate radio. There's numbers of sets, man, from Wiley to Dizzy to everyone. I was involved heavily, was doing all the Sidewinders, was doing all of the Eskimo dances. Sorry about the noise, we're on a film set at the moment.
That's all right.
I was there on the pirate radio, man. We started this shit, let's be real, you know. I don't really talk about it too much because we're focusing on the now, but yeah, it was definitely there from the start. We've definitely been hanging up the rigs for the radio stations. We was doing all of that, paying the £5 subs to get on. You know, we was there when it was like that. So it's good to see how far it's come. It's good to see that the genre and the music is blowing up and people are feeding their families from it, which is great. And that's the side I do love. But for me personally, I just feel like I also love people. And for me, I just want to make sure that while I'm here on this earth, my message wakes people up. It gives people truth. I don't want to sell people a lie to make a living for my family. I'd rather try and change the minds of the next generation and wake them up so they can do the right things and try and inspire their next generation. So slowly we can form some kind of equality in this country, because it's still very unbalanced and it's a bit crazy right now. So I'm using my music to do that. I mean, look, even the other side of things, sometimes I think about this, which is, Steve, you see, like when we go to the cinema, you'll go in the cinema and you'll see a sign and it says 18. So as long as you're 18 and above, you can go in and see this film. Now, in that film, you will accept anything they do in that movie. They could fucking chop a woman up.
Yeah.
They could kill someone. They could shoot a police officer in the head. They could do whatever they want to do in that film, and you'll see it as art. We look at it as art. We look at it like, oh, that was fucking sick, man. Like that film was scary, but it was sick, like Saw or some shit like that.
Yeah.
So for me, how I'm looking at my music, I'm just like, when I think about Black Friday and I think about my album and some of the things I'm saying, they might shock some people, but I'm using my music in the same way that these directors use their film. They're telling these stories or they're showing these shocking things that are happening to wake people up for different reasons. But to me, it's just art. So I'm not doing it in film, I'm doing it in music. And when people understand that, the people that do get it are like, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, I was talking about this to Drill Minister, whose real name I'm not going to say, but you'll probably know who he is, actually. I was talking to Drill Minister about this, and I sort of put the comparison to him that during the 90s, George Bush Senior President was going apeshit about hip-hop and how you talk about killing cops all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yet it's fine for Arnold Schwarzenegger to kill 15 cops in one of his movies.
This is the whole point. This is the whole point. Like, I'm cool and I won't lash out on that because people don't understand. It's because they haven't been given the information yet to make their brain understand that it's the same as the movies. It's an art form. We make this art up through our creative minds. I have a vision about something, can we create the art? And I want to show it. The same way the guy makes an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie and he's running and I'll be back and he's shooting up the place and it's all cool and it's fun, you know. It's at At the end of the day, it's art. You can't hear about a kid going fucking shoot up the school in America, and then you hear the news talking about, oh, he watched an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. They don't blame the films, so they shouldn't directly blame the music.
No,
in that
absolutely.
Same sense.
But that's what's, I mean, that's what's happening with the drill at the minute. And it's the same old shit decade after decade. If it wasn't jazz, if it wasn't rock and roll, if it wasn't hip-hop, if it wasn't garage, if it wasn't grime, it's now drill. So quickly, in just 30 seconds. So we've had two tracks now from Black Friday series. What can we expect from the following tracks? Because, I mean, you've covered some real ground in the first two, as it is. And I'm like, where is he going to go with this next?
Yeah, I got some surprises up my sleeve. I'm here now. I'm at the studio now. We're basically preparing for fucking, but can't really see much, but we're preparing down there for Black Friday 3. All I'm going to say is I got a policeman here. And that's all I'm going to fucking say. And he ain't my mate. Believe that. They've been killing us in the fucking street. So we're going to pay back in part 3. So it's going to be fun, man. There's going to be a lot of new truths in that. And I'm looking forward to sharing it with you guys, man. I can't wait. Fun. And for you especially, Steve, I want to thank you for all the support, because I see how much presence you give me on Twitter and your following and your platform. So I appreciate your
thank
support,
you.
Man.
I just try my best. Mate. Marcy Phonics, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Real pleasure.
Yes, sir.
Nice one.
Come on, man. Respect, brother. Steve.
Much love to Marcy Phonics. He took time out of a video shoot to speak to me, so big respect to him. So here it is, Black Friday 2, and be warned that this contains language which may offend some of you, or it may be a bit too real.
Black Friday. I'm coming for all of you. I dare man say my name. I dare you. Heads are coming off. Let's go. Marcy's back in his nuts. Marcy's back in his cut. 10 men, one room, show a cold, just know that everyone's fucked. Now everyone's stuck, now everyone duck. Find the fat girl's cunt, throw flour to the west for crumbs. Make it fart and hump, blind girl gave head to my fun. I still come, I said, look what you've just done. Look what you've done. Meet me at my gates, you're better off licking out snakes. My penis smells like cheese, your girl's pom-pom must be great. Sperm on a plate, fat ting from Towie's putting on weight. Bitch, fuck what you say. They'll fake one's hair like Trump's toupee. Fuck UK. Keaton Jones, go fuck your face. No sober man can beat that. Must be why her name is no late. Mad. But why does he cast though? Why? Dick in the nostril. Oh no, fuck knows. Refunded Tesco food at Costco. Spray corn like sports bars closing down. Everything must go. I can't stand your flow. I never stream your shit. Dead. Needle in a haystack. You're just a potential prick. I don't play fair. What? I piss on your street. And what? Pinch an arm with a limp. You just might need your stick.
And that's it. Episode 2 of Top Line Caged is done. I would like to thank my amazing guests this week, the awe-inspiring Paula Peters and the staggeringly talented Marcy Phonics. Of course, behind the scenes, I would like to thank my beautiful girlfriend, Nicola Jeffrey. Please follow her on Twitter. It's at Nicola C. Jeffrey. Also, please follow Ray Star Music, my in-house singer. She's at Ray_Star113. And, of course, thank you to the Canary for uncaging me for another week. Will I be back for Episode 3? Find out next Sunday. Until then, take care of yourselves. Top Line Caged, done.
Uncaged.